WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Tuesday, July 4th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Today is also Independence Day. We are commemorating the day that America's founding fathers declared their break with tyrannical England and announced their sovereignty as a nation. The United States is exceptional. It is exceptionally exceptional. No other nation in all of human history has, at its peak, been as free and prosperous. Since its founding, no other nation has been the target destination of more immigrants seeking liberty and a high standard of living. It was for good reason that America was labeled the land of opportunity. For today's episode, we're going to play one of the most popular films the John Birch Society has ever created. Overview of America looks at what made America so successful and what kind of government we should have. In the second half of the show, we discuss why America doesn't look like the nation it once was. Conspiracies, from theories to facts, makes a solid case for the secretive agenda to destroy the United States and create a one-world tyrannical government. Without further ado, let's watch.
The United States of America. Born in 1776, our country is the offspring of a religious-based heritage of liberty under law. Blessed with great natural resources and a pioneer people given to industry and moral discipline, our nation grew to be strong and prosperous and developed the finest governmental system ever devised by man. America soon became known as the refuge of the world's tired, hungry, and poor. Millions left everything in the old world to start over in a land that rewarded initiative and hard work and perseverance. The many millions who didn't come here found comfort and hope in knowing that indeed there was such a bastion of freedom and opportunity, a place where dreams could become reality. Today, our nation appears wealthier and more powerful than ever. New technologies have revolutionized our daily lives. Luxuries once enjoyed only by the rich are commonplace and very affordable. Home ownership is widespread, and our people have the expectation of continued economic growth and prosperity. Yet more and more people are coming to realize that they may prosper materially only for a time because their freedoms are diminishing. The sobering reality is that America has been led far from its praiseworthy beginnings. Our people and businesses groan under a heavy burden of economic, political, and social problems, which are the result of a widespread departure from the fundamental truths that made our nation great. If the United States of America is to endure, citizens far and wide must once again come to understand, embrace, and live by timeless concepts. Concepts called Americanism. What made America great and set it apart from other lands? Was it natural resources? No, other lands are equally blessed.
Was it the people?
No, the people who built America came from elsewhere. Was it government planning and wisdom that spurred our nation to such heights? No, again. It wasn't what government did that made America great. It was what government was prevented from doing that made the difference. What set America apart from other lands was freedom for the individual. Freedom to work, to produce, to succeed, and especially to keep the fruits of one's labors. America became great precisely because the stifling effect of too much government had been prevented. However, freedom in America was not totally unrestrained. Americans overwhelmingly chose to limit their actions with moral codes such as the Ten Commandments, personal morality, and limited government. It's a combination that characterized America and made it the envy of the world. When our founding fathers decided they'd had enough of British oppression, they broke away and declared independence. They stated as self-evident truth in the Declaration of Independence that men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. In other words, God gave man his rights, and that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in the very next sentence, the founders defined the proper role of government when they stated that to secure these rights, governments are instituted. This is the entire philosophical base of our nation. Here, the government cannot legitimately redistribute the wealth, assume power over the people's lives, and dominate man's existence with oppressive taxation, regulations, and controls. According to the founders, government was to be a negative force, which leaves people alone. Its sole function is to protect citizens from one another and from foreign governments, and especially from their own government itself. The founders did not create a government to be a positive force, to do things for people, to take from some, to give to others. They understood that when a government starts doing something for one citizen, it has to take from another to do so. And in the process, it gains control over both. Britain's rulers didn't accept the Declaration of Independence, so our forefathers had to fight a war to make it stick. By 1783, the war for independence had been won, and British forces were sent back across the sea. But the governmental system at that time was weak. It had no power to settle disputes between the states, nor the power to tax for proper needs, such as national defense. So in 1787, delegates from 12 of the 13 states met in Philadelphia to revise the system, and they produced an entirely new governmental structure known as the Constitution of the United States. Keeping faith with the thunderous assertions in the Declaration, the Constitution was written to govern the government, not the people, and not the states, each of which was a jealous guardian of its own sovereignty. The founders created a central government with strictly limited powers. This left the states free to compete with one another, to be the best state, the one with the least amount of taxation and controls, one where citizens would want to build a business and raise a family. That spirit of competition produced excellence, as honest competition always does. It's important to note that the Constitution wasn't forced on the people. It was sent back to the states for ratification, and several of the founding fathers wrote essays explaining it in an effort to persuade fellow Americans to adopt this new system of government. Some of the essays written by James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and John Jay were collected into a volume known as the Federalist Papers. Those essays provide valuable insights into the intent of the founders in establishing our government. Eventually, all 13 states ratified the Constitution, and then each ratified the first 10 amendments known as the Bill of Rights, further tying the hands of the federal government. These amendments are indeed about rights, but it would have been better had the Bill of Rights been labeled the Bill of Limitations on Government. Why? Because it's vital to realize that the Bill of Rights never gave citizens any rights whatsoever. Its sole purpose was to safeguard God-given rights by limiting government power. The founders even insisted that Congress shall make no law about speech, religion, the press, assembly, the right to petition, the right to keep and bear arms, and so on. These amendments are directed squarely at the federal government, not the individual and not the states. They are like most of the Ten Commandments, which are essentially thou shalt nots. The Bill of Rights says Congress shall not, shall not, shall not, all the way up to the marvelous Tenth Amendment, which says in effect, if we forgot anything, you can't do that either. When Benjamin Franklin exited the Constitutional Convention, he was asked by a woman, "Sir, what have you given us?" His immediate response was, "A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it." Yet most Americans today have been persuaded that our nation's governmental system is a democracy and not a republic. The difference between these two is essential in understanding Americanism and the American system. Before we discuss political systems, however, it's helpful to address the confusion that has been spread about the political spectrum. Many have been led to believe that the political spectrum places groups such as communists on the far left, fascists or dictators on the far right, and political moderates or centrists in the middle. However, a more accurate political spectrum will show government having zero power on the far right to having 100% power on the far left. At the extreme right, there is no government. The extreme left features total government under such labels as communism, socialism, Nazism, fascism, princes, potentates, dictators, kings, any form of total government. Those who claim that Nazis and fascists are right-wing never define their terms. This amounts to spreading confusion. Toward the middle of the political spectrum can be found the type of government limited to its proper role of protecting the rights of the people. That's where the Constitution of the United States is. Those who advocate such a form of government are really constitutional moderates. So let's analyze the basic forms of government. They are monarchy or dictatorship ruled by one, oligarchy ruled by a few, democracy ruled by a majority, republic ruled by law, and anarchy, which is ruled by no one. In discussing these five, we'll see that they can be narrowed down to even fewer. Looking first at monarchy or dictatorship, this form of government doesn't really exist in the practical sense. It's always a group that puts one of its members up front. A king has his council of nobles or earls, and every dictator has his bureaucrats or commissars, the men behind the scenes. This isn't ruled by one, even though one person may be the visible leader. It's ruled by a group. So let's eliminate monarchy, dictatorship, because it never truly exists. Oligarchy, which is ruled by a group, is the most common form of government in all history. And it is the most common form of government today. Most of the nations of the world are ruled by a powerful few, and therefore oligarchy remains. At the other end, we find anarchy, which means without government. Some people have looked over history and found that many of its worst crimes were committed by governments, so they decided that having no government might be a good idea. But this is a mistake, because as the ancient Greeks stated, without law there can be no freedom. Our founding fathers agreed and held that some amount of government is a necessary force in any civilized, orderly society. In a state of anarchy, however, everyone has to guard life, liberty, and property, and the lives of family members. Everyone must be armed, and movement is severely restricted because one's property has to be protected at all times. Civilized people have always hired someone to do the guarding, a sheriff, a police force, or some branch of government. Once law enforcement was in place, the people were freer. They could leave their property, work in the fields, and so on. In short, the proper amount of government makes everyone freer. There are some who advocate anarchy, however, not because they want no government, but because they don't like what they have. They use anarchy as a tool for revolutionary change. The condition of anarchy is very much like a vacuum where something rushes in to fill it. These calculating anarchists work to break down the existing government with rioting, killing, looting, and terrorism. Tragically, the people living in such chaos often go to those best able to put an end to it and beg them to take over and restore order. And who is best able to put an end to the chaos? The very people who started it. The anarchists who created the problem then create a government run by them, an oligarchy, where they have total power. This is exactly what happened in Russia that led to Lenin taking total power, and in Germany where Hitler's brown shirts created the chaos that brought him to power. But anarchy isn't a stable form of government. It's a quick transition from something that exists to something desired by the power hungry. It's a temporary condition, and because it isn't permanent, we eliminate it as well. The word democracy comes from two Greek words, demos, meaning people, and kratian, meaning to rule. Democracy, therefore, means the rule of the people, majority rule. This, of course, sounds good, but suppose the majority decides to take away one's home, or business, or children. Obviously, there has to be a limit. The flaw in democracy is that the majority isn't restrained. If more than half the people can be persuaded to want something in a democracy, they rule. What about republic? Well, that comes from the Latin, res, meaning thing, and publica, meaning public. It means the public thing, the law. A true republic is one where the government is limited by law, leaving the people alone. America's founders had a clean slate to write on. They could have set up an oligarchy. In fact, there were some who wanted George Washington to be their king. But the founding fathers knew history, and they chose to give us the rule of law in a republic, not the rule of a majority in a democracy. Why? Let's demonstrate the difference in the setting of the Old West. Consider a lynch mob in a democracy. 35 horseback riders chase one lone gunman. They catch him, and they vote 35-1 to hang him. Democracy has triumphed, and there's one less gunman to contend with. Now consider the same scenario in a republic. The 35 horseback riders catch the gunman and vote 35-1 to hang him. But the sheriff arrives, and he says, "You can't kill him. He's got his right to a fair trial." So they take the gunman back to town. A jury of his peers is selected, and they hear the evidence and the defense, and they decide if he shall hang. Does the jury even decide by majority rule? No, it has to be unanimous, or he goes free. The rights of the gunman aren't subject to majority rule, but to the law. This is the essence of a republic. Many Americans would be surprised to learn that the word democracy does not appear in the Declaration of Independence or the U.S. Constitution. Nor does it appear in any of the constitutions of the 50 states. The founders did everything they could to keep us from having a democracy. James Madison, rightly known as the father of the Constitution, wrote in Essay No. 10 of the Federalist Papers, "Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths." Alexander Hamilton agreed, and he stated, "We are a republican government. Real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy." And John Adams, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, stated, "Democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself." The founders had good reason to look upon democracy with contempt because they knew that the democracies in the early Greek city-states produced some of the wildest excesses of government imaginable. During that period in Greece, there was a man named Solon who urged creation of a fixed body of law not subject to majority whims. But where the Greeks never adopted Solon's wise counsel, the Romans did. Based on what they knew of Solon's laws, they created the 12 tables of the Roman law and, in effect, built a republic that limited government power and left the people alone. Since government was limited, the people were free to produce, with the understanding that they could keep the fruits of their labor. In time, Rome became wealthy and the envy of the world. In the midst of plenty, however, the Roman people forgot what freedom entailed. They forgot that the essence of freedom is the proper limitation of government. When government power grows, people freedom recedes. Once the Romans dropped their guard, power-seeking politicians began to exceed the powers granted them in the Roman Constitution. Some learned that they could elect politicians who would use government power to take property from some and give it to others. Agriculture subsidies were introduced, followed by housing and welfare programs. Inevitably, taxes rose and controls over the private sector were imposed. Soon, a number of Rome's producers could no longer make ends meet, and they went on the dole. Productivity declined, shortages developed, and mobs began roaming the streets, demanding bread and circuses from the government. Many were induced to trade freedom for security. Eventually, the whole system came crashing down. They went from a republic to a democracy and ended up with an oligarchy under a progression of the Caesars. Thus, democracy itself is not a stable form of government. Instead, it is the gradual transition from limited government to the unlimited rule of an oligarchy. Knowing this, we as Americans are ultimately left with only two choices. We can keep our republic, as Franklin put it, or we will inevitably end up with an oligarchy, a tyranny of the elite. Just as there is widespread confusion regarding political systems, there is similar confusion in the economic arena. All during the 20th century, Americans were led to believe that there was a great struggle going on between capitalism and the communist world. Undoubtedly, a struggle existed, but the real adversaries were rarely identified properly. No discussion about economic systems will make sense without first defining terms. And one of the most basic terms in economics is capital, whose definition is the means of production. To illustrate what capital is, let's consider a very simple economy. On the sands of a small island, a castaway has just washed ashore. He has no food and he's hungry. He searches the island, he finds no berries, coconuts, or anything edible. He goes back into the water and tries to catch fish with his bare hands, but he fails. So he goes back up on shore and he finds a bush. He breaks off a branch, he gnaws at one end to make a sharp tip. Back into the water he goes, and with his spear, he catches fish. His spear is capital. It's the means of production for catching fish. He gave up some of his time and some of his energy to produce something he could not eat, but something that would help him to produce something that he could eat. Capital, therefore, can be tools, machinery, and even a man's handmade spear to catch fish. Such being the case, consider that the communists in the former Soviet Union, as well as in China and Cuba, have always used tools and machinery. Officials there even view people as capital. Therefore, by strict definition, are not communists capitalists? For that matter, isn't everyone a capitalist? And so, is not every economic system a capitalist system? What then is the difference between what the communist system is and what the American capitalist system is supposed to be? The difference is ownership of the capital. Is the system monopolistic, state-controlled capitalism, or is it competitive, free enterprise capitalism? It is between these two opposing economic systems that a battle has always raged. Before we proceed, let's also define free market. Basically, it's a self-regulating system in which all parties are completely free to transact with one another. But where force, fraud, or injury damages one party, the government's role is only to punish those who commit such offenses and to vindicate the rights of the other party. This protects the integrity of the free market or free enterprise system without intervening in it. The term private property also needs clarification, for private ownership and control of property is a key component in the free enterprise system. In order for ownership of property to be full and complete, all four of its aspects must be met. These are title, control, use, and the ability to dispose of what a person owns. In a free market economy, these aspects are unrestrained, so long as the owner does not infringe on the legitimate rights and claims of others. True ownership of property and freedom go hand in hand. They always have. Now let's compare the two systems of capitalism. In the competitive free enterprise system, capital or property is both owned privately and controlled privately. In the monopolistic system, holding title to capital can be accomplished privately or by the state. But more importantly, capital is controlled by the state or by the elite few who control the state. The Communist Manifesto, which contains the basic program for all communists and all socialists, explicitly preaches the destruction and abolition of private property. Karl Marx understood the powers of controlling capital, and so have all communists and socialists who have ever looked and still look to Marx as their leader. State-controlled capitalism results in high prices and low quality. After all, why would a monopoly strive to improve if it has no competition? On the other hand, honest, thrifty, and hardworking producers throughout the world prefer competitive free enterprise system for all. Here, low prices and high quality prevail because a variety of producers will seek to attract the widest amount of customers. Competition results in excellence and always has. Just as the political spectrum shows the range of government power, we can also plot the various economic systems along another spectrum. These forms of government control in the market stand in sharp contrast with a completely free market. In the last century or so, there have been basically four forms of state-controlled economies, all on the far left of the economic spectrum: fascism, Nazism, socialism, and communism. In each, the government controls the capital. The difference among these is how much is owned or controlled outright by the government. In a fascist system, the government doesn't own businesses on paper, but it does control them. In Mussolini's Italy, even though he didn't hold title to businesses, he told the owners what to produce, how much to produce, when to produce, where to buy raw materials, who to hire, who to fire, and what price to charge. The rest, he said, was up to them. The fascist system is more efficient than other state-controlled systems insofar as those living under it think they still own their businesses. Shopkeepers concern themselves with maintenance on the machinery, employee relations, painting the building, and so forth. But the government controls owners through an array of taxation and regulations. Under Nazism, which means National Socialism, its proponents went one step further and acquired ownership of some corporations, such as Volkswagen. However, Hitler didn't seize ownership of other industrial giants. He simply controlled them, just as Mussolini had controlled businesses in Italy. Socialism is where government officials acquire possession of major industries such as transportation, communications, and utilities in order to leverage control over the entire economy. Through ownership of these vital segments of industry and by creating government regulatory agencies, socialists gain control over virtually everything else. Finally, there is communism, the granddaddy of all in the economic sense. In a way, communism is more honest than fascism because all of the capital is owned and controlled by the state. There are no pretenses about it. Now let's combine political and economic systems, because ultimately one never exists without the other. We see again that there are only two ultimate choices: a competitive free enterprise system in a republic, or a monopolistic state control system under an oligarchy. A moral people have always been a vital element of America's strength. The founding fathers well understood the biblical teaching that righteousness exalteth a nation. They also knew that expecting a free market economy and limited government under a republic to endure without morality was expecting the impossible. James Madison cautioned that limited government alone was inadequate for our nation. And John Adams observed, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." George Washington stated, "Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle." Yet there are people today who think that liberty is license and that morality is unimportant or irrelevant to politics and economics. But as Benjamin Franklin added, "Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters." The alternative to Americanism is what has condemned most of the human race to live as slaves throughout the millennia. It is the idea that rights are privileges dispensed by an oligarchy according to the unlimited rule of men, that the state should control or own the nation's capital with all economic activity directed from a central power, and that morality is inconsequential, and that security is preferred over freedom and opportunity. Our nation continues to be steered off course, and the principles that led to America's greatness are being cast aside. The simple question for us is, do we continue the slide away from our nation's founding principles, or do we return to the kind of government we inherited? Time is running out for Americans who sense that something is wrong.
They have to decide what kind of a country we shall leave for future generations. All that is needed is for a sufficient number of Americans to get involved in the fight for freedom and to return our nation to less government, more responsibility, and with God's help, a better world.
Freedom is the cure.
You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
So for the last few years, establishment media organs have constantly bombarded the public with news of growing extremism on the right. They throw out words like far right, radical, and extreme, like candy in a small town parade. Pretty much anything left of Mitt Romney and Lindsey Graham has become far right extremism. Many times, major media mouthpieces say the right's extremism is a result of growing belief in conspiracy theories. Oh yes, that most leprous label, conspiracy theorist. Just in the last couple of weeks alone, the parent organization of the New American magazine, the John Birch Society, has been blamed for ushering extremism, far-rightism, into the establishment GOP. They've blamed the JBS for spreading conspiracy theories. Now, the label of conspiracy theorist is intended to be a stigma, a weapon to discredit the poor soul or souls hit by it. And it's supposed to discourage anyone who dares to think outside of the approved narrative. But like with so many other attacks of the propaganda media, labeling half the country conspiracy theorists is proving ineffective. People are realizing this pejorative is the establishment's way of trying to shut down a conversation they don't want you to have. So let's look at a few conspiracy theories that turn out to be very credible and finish with one that is so true that if completely accomplished, it would destroy life as we know it. We'll start out with a drop in the bucket of conspiracy theories. In some of the articles I recently mentioned on the JBS, they labeled us conspiracy theorists for opposing mass water fluoridation back in the day before it was implemented nationwide. During the 50s and the 60s, the JBS, through our affiliate magazine, American Opinion, opposed mass fluoridation on the grounds that it was collectivized medicine and that there was no expert consensus that it wasn't harmful. It turned out we were on to something all along. Because on March 15, 2023, the National Toxicology Program released a draft report linking prenatal and childhood fluoride exposure to reduced IQ in children. Furthermore, the report found that there is also some evidence that fluoride exposure is associated with other neurodevelopmental and cognitive effects in children. The peer review report took 6 years to complete. And if it were up to the corrupt Department of Health and Human Services and the CDC, we would have never seen the report. It took a lawsuit by Food and Water Watch to get it released. So much for that baseless conspiracy theory. Now, let's look at another one from not too long ago. Remember when people began realizing that COVID-19 had likely come out of a lab and not from bats? Here are some of the propaganda media's biggest stars channeling their inner epidemiologist.
Tom Cotton, a couple of days ago, spouting a conspiracy theory that the Chinese made this virus up.
You have the lab in Wuhan.
In a lab. You have Rush Limbaugh every day, Presidential Medal, Freedom of Honor. It's hard to say this is the most reckless thing he's ever done.
Those same agencies now have been tapped
with investigating one of Trump world's most favorite conspiracy theories. New York Times reports this, quote, senior Trump administration officials have pushed American spy agencies to hunt for evidence to support an unsubstantiated theory that a government lab in Wuhan, China was the origin of the coronavirus outbreak.
Tom Cotton, one of Donald Trump's staunchest allies in the Senate, suggested that the virus might have originated in a high-security biochemical lab in China. In the 1980s, I remember when the far left trafficked in rumors about HIV having been invented in CIA labs. The far right has now found its own virus conspiracy theory.
Well, it turns out that 3 years later, that conspiracy theory has become the most likely explanation on the origins of COVID-19. Let's watch Senator Tom Cotton, whose op-ed in the New York Times in 2020 nearly led to a mutiny at the Snowflake-ridden nation's paper of record.
From the very beginning, I believe this virus almost certainly came from a lab. I thought it was just a matter of common sense. You didn't need secret intelligence or classified information just to look at the facts. You had a food market that the Chinese communists were saying was the source of the virus that didn't even sell bats in an area where bats were not located. And then you had a laboratory where they were known to focus and work with bat-based coronaviruses that had had a history, like many Chinese labs, of safety incidents. Again, to me, it was just a matter of common sense. But what did the liberal media and what did Joe Biden and other Democrats do? When you point these things out, they called you a racist or a xenophobe. They said you were spreading conspiracy theories and all the rest. And now, you know, 3 years on, I think most Americans recognize that it almost certainly came from that laboratory, that the Chinese communists covered it up, and that you still have the liberal media and Democrats acting like lawyers for Chinese communists, trying to excuse them, trying to say, well, there's not much consensus. We're not know for sure, much like they did a couple weeks ago when China sent a spy balloon to America.
Now, let's look at another conspiracy theory that is unfortunately becoming reality in real time. When the COVID-19 injection was rolled out, the New American published leading experts who warned it would not be safe and effective.
I wouldn't want anybody to get the vaccine and think that they're being protected against COVID-19. In the United States today, we have approximately 77 million individuals fully vaccinated, and we have 2,602 deaths, 2,602 deaths. So it's unprecedented how many deaths have accrued.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination. You are heading for the greatest catastrophe in your history.
So what did the scientists moonlighting as news reporters and philanthropists call these people raising the alarm?
As President Biden's COVID-19 vaccine effort ramps up, religious-based conspiracy theories surrounding the vaccinations are exploding on social media.
The anti-vaccination movement is growing, and more children are getting sick, really sick, due to a new wave of conspiracy theories that have been shared through social media.
I hope it goes away. I hope it doesn't hold back, you know, mask wearing or seeking out vaccines. The percentage that's really misled by these conspiracy theories, it's unclear to me. There's millions of messages out there, you know, where my name or Dr. Fauci's name is used, but
unfortunately, it wasn't a conspiracy theory. It's become a reality for people all over the world. In 2021, just months after the injection rolled out, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, was already reporting astronomical spikes of adverse effects. Then, early in 2022, a report from life insurance group One America revealed that all-cause mortality rates of working people aged 18 to 64 increased by 40% over the second half of 2021. The CEO of One America, J. Scott Davidson, called it a staggering amount.
And we are seeing right now the highest death rates we have ever seen in the history of this business, not just at One America. The data is consistent across every player in that business. Now, this is primarily working age people, 18 to 64, that are in employers like all the employers on the screen here. And what we saw just in third quarter, and we're seeing it continue into fourth quarter, is that death rates are up 40% over what they were pre-pandemic.
Dr. Robert Malone, an inventor of the mRNA technology and a leader in the medical freedom movement, called the news, quote, A nuclear truth bomb masquerading as an insurance agent's dry manila envelope full of actuarial tables, unquote. Well, that's a mouthful. With the cat out of the bag and threatening to escape the house, mainstream media quickly went to work, laying cover for the injection by saying this anomalous spike was a result of the Delta variants and deferred medical care during the pandemic. Except that this age group was not the 70 and over that accounted for an overwhelming majority of COVID deaths, and it didn't explain one other phenomenon. We were beginning to see regular reports of the strangest thing. Young people, and not just young people, but athletes, dropping dead of heart attacks. Expert statistician and former BlackRock manager Edward Dowd published a book titled Cause Unknown, The Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022, which included 25 pages of news headlines on the deaths of young people. Here are a few recent tragic headlines related to this development. Unfortunately, we can keep going, but you get the point. It's become tragically obvious that the injections are not safe and effective. And furthermore, it looks like they can be downright deadly. Here's the Surgeon General of Florida being a conspiracy theorist.
These vaccines have a terrible safety profile. At this point in the pandemic, you know, I'm not sure anyone should be taking them.
And let's look at our last conspiracy theory, the granddaddy of them all. For at least a few hundred years, men possessed by the desire to rule the world have been secretly plotting to do just that. Generations of these men, insiders we call them, have worked in secret to make this happen. The insider strategy to bring about their one-world tyrannical government can be summarized with a few broad goals. They work to destroy all religion, to destroy all existing sovereign governments, and to destroy all traditional human institutions. And the main weapons to make this happen include war, which they foment and then exploit to bring about changes the public wouldn't normally stand for, money, which they use to influence public policy in a way that makes them richer and regular people poorer, hatred, which they incite by funding people and organizations that sow division, and then they weaponize their control over media and education institutions to attack religion and family. The idea is to eradicate the main glue that holds the current order together, that being the traditional family and God. You don't need 20/20 vision to see this is happening. One blurry eye will do. While most people haven't believed or known of this conspiracy, it hasn't been a carefully guarded secret either. In 2003, David Rockefeller, former chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, wrote in his biography, quote, "Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty and I'm proud of it," unquote. Former Georgetown University professor Carol Quigley, whose students included President Bill Clinton, wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time. He admitted not only that such a conspiracy existed, but that he knew this because he studied it for 20 years and he was allowed for two of those years to look at its papers and secret documents. He explained that the powers of financial capitalism had a far-reaching plan. Nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. In 2020, we began seeing what this world would look like. When COVID-19 was unleashed on the world, nearly every government in the world, at the behest of the international governing body, the World Health Organization, implemented the same destructive, freedom-crushing edicts. From lockdowns to mandatory masking to injection coercion, the world as a whole was equally terrorized. This continued happening to varying degrees, even after it became obvious that COVID wasn't as harmful and that the so-called mitigation measures were causing more harm than the disease. It was at this time that we began noticing the globalists at the World Economic Forum, a collection of bankers and corporate plutocrats working with governments. These aspiring Napoleons worked to destroy the current order so they could piece the rubble back together according to their fascist, communist, technocratic model. They saw this as the opportunity to foist upon the world the final pieces of their global government. Here is Yuval Noah Harari, a mouthpiece for the globalists, saying in 2017, before COVID, that a catastrophe would probably be the only way to bring about a world government.
One option that some people talk about is that only a catastrophe can shake humankind and open the path to a real system of global governance. And they say that we can't do it before the catastrophe, but we need to start laying the foundations so that when the disaster strikes, we can react quickly.
And the technocrats at the World Economic Forum were already laying the conditioning groundwork for the slavish system they wanted to impose on us. Notice that while they said that you will own nothing, they didn't say who will own everything. The answer, of course, is they will. Our benevolent, all-wise, and powerful masters. The collaborative global response to COVID was unprecedented. From lockdowns, to masking, to suppression of effective cheap drugs, to the tyrannical push for universal injection, and to the vital role of regime propagandists the media played, there has never been such a large and successful campaign of tyranny. The cooperative COVID response was no accident. They were ready for this. They had been practicing. They were ready to use this catastrophic virus as an excuse to turn you into a serf. Here's cartoonish yet all too real villain WEF head Klaus Schwab letting you know that the future is one world government.
Our futures are intrinsically connected to one another as the profound challenges to mankind, such as climate change, are globally interconnected and require collaborative responses. In conclusion, and despite all the challenges, we have to uphold our responsibility, which we have towards the next generation, and which we can only fulfill through collaboration on a national and on a global level.
The quest for global government is not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy fact. It is happening as I speak. The John Birch Society was founded exactly for such a time as this. We were founded to expose this plan and to stop it. Our founder, Robert Welch, founded the JBS to restore liberty. Here's Welch quoting from his speech at the founding meeting in 1958.
In the 20th century, modern man is simply being played for a sucker by an immoral gang of sophisticated criminals. These cunning megalomaniacs seek to make themselves the absolute rulers of a human race of enslaved robots in which every civilized trait has been destroyed. The insiders at the top and all their communist minions constitute only a tiny percentage of the race they plan to rule. Although they now occupy most of the positions of great prestige and influence in Washington and London and Paris, as well as in the financial, educational, and publishing circles of the whole world, their power rests entirely on bluff, pretense, and deception. Both their success and their purposes are contrary to the whole current of human history. They are sitting precariously on the gigantic powder keg of all honest human emotions. Despite their arrogant assurance on the contemporary scene, they themselves are well aware that sooner or later the whole framework of their cruel power will be blown to pieces by a mighty uprising of the incalculable forces of man's moral principles, love for freedom, and common sense. How soon that day of delivery may come will depend on you.
So joining me to discuss this is Editor-in-Chief of The New American, Gary Benoit.
Hello, Paul.
Hey, Gary.
As you can see, I came dressed appropriate for the occasion because you had asked me to be on your program to talk about conspiracy theory.
Yes, and you came in a tinfoil hat.
And I came in a tinfoil hat. For all I knew, you wanted to talk about maybe cheese on the moon, a moon made of green cheese, or perhaps the biggest whopper of all might be the claim that President Trump was actually put in the White House by Putin. Can you imagine a more ridiculous conspiracy?
Yes.
But I want you to know, Paul, that I'm really relieved to know that we're not going to be talking about conspiracy theory. So I'm going to get rid of this.
Oh, thank goodness.
We're going to be talking about conspiracy fact, because there is a huge difference. And conspiracy fact is what the John Birch Society and what the New American Magazine specialize in. And we don't have much time right now, but I want to recommend this book, Endgame, COVID and the Dark State Quest for Bio-Digital Convergence in a Transhumanist World,
right,
by the publisher of the New American, Dennis
Barrett. Yes.
And we'll have an ad regarding this book at the break coming up very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage everybody to read this book, because this is all based on conspiracy fact. It shows how what has happened with COVID, the lockdowns, the forced medication. The precursor, which, as you mentioned, was fluoride. That was forced medication by putting that in the water supply.
Right.
And now people supposedly are not going to be allowed to have a choice between whether or not they get something injected into their bodies. And
right.
All this fits together. And again, it's conspiracy fact. The evidence is overwhelming. And, of course, it all points to control. Control of what? Control of everything.
Right.
As you pointed out in a cursory way in what you had in your presentation, which was excellent, Paul. It leaves me with very little to say.
Are you sure? You know, you've been the editor for The New American for so many years, and you've been at the helm while we publish so much information. Any last words for those watching and who may not be sold on the conspiracy fact that of a plan for one world government?
Well, I think the way to sell it is to point out that we've been saying this from the very beginning. When Robert Welch founded the John Birch Society in 1958, he warned then about this organized plan, this organized
right.
conspiracy. At the time was mostly manifested in the form of communism, but he also talked about the conspiracy above communism, the insiders, the elitists who worked with the communists
right.
because they supported the same thing,
the master
which was
conspiracy.
Total monopolistic control over everything. And back then, when we warned the town and told the people and got people involved, a lot of people did not believe it.
Right.
But more and more people are believing it today because it's become so open. The word conspiracy almost does not fit anymore.
Yeah, we're always debating that.
Right.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you for all the work that your team and that you've put for all these years. And we hope that that it's paid dividends. And thank you for your time.
It is. And thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you for tuning in, and we will be right back on the other side of this break.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber, and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the Singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP. ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of the New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.